This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Atlanta Hawks made a nice trade last night. We'll get to that coming up. Plus, later on in the afternoon, talk more about the about NBA free agency with that still ongoing. Brooks Koepka speaking out about his move to live golf. We'll get to that. Get you ready for your July 4th holiday. And we have to do our persona non grata of the week today because I won't be with you tomorrow. And I won't be with you next week either. Taking time off for the holiday. Hope you have a great July 4th weekend. Hopefully a long weekend for you. Maybe a long week. And we'll catch up. I'll catch up with you again on July 11th, 7-11. Following next week. Still more to do the next couple of hours in the meantime. And we'll get to that Hawks trade in just a moment. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page. And there you'll see the podcast. You also have an opportunity to reach out to the show by heading over to charlestonsportsradio.com and clicking on our show page. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text the show 843-608-1734. Or you can always join the conversation on the phones 843-721-9500. By the way, there is nothing. I wear an Apple Watch, and I've always said, like, I don't really know what I'm doing with this thing. It's just pretty much to track my steps and my my progress throughout the day in terms of how many calories you burn and, you know, how many steps you take and all that sort of stuff. And so in my fitness rings, one of the other things is that they want you to stand for parts of, like, 12 hours or stand 12 times a day. There's nothing, like, more condescending that when you happen to get up and you don't even do it intentionally. I got up during the commercial break, went and grabbed some water, and you get the notification on your Apple Watch that says, like, congrats, you did it. You stood up. That's like one of the most condescending things that happens in my day-to-day life. My Apple Watch congratulating me just for standing up. Thank you. I'm glad I'm still able to do that. I could stand up okay and walk to go get some water.
Does it tell you to breathe as well? I had an older older model, and it would alert me when I hadn't taken enough breaths, and so I would have to do like 10 deep breaths.
Yeah, but that one's good. I like that.
Yeah, I like it, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes, or if you get really worked up, like if I'm doing a broadcast.
Sure.
Doing a Citadel football game, and it's an exciting moment, yeah, my Apple Watch will tell me, like, whatever. Do your mindful breathing. No, I'm in the middle of a game. But at least it's looking out for you. But the one, whenever I stand up, if I'm sitting, you know, I'm sitting here talking on the radio, so I sit for a while, then I happen to stand up after like an hour. And it's like, congrats, you did it. You stood up. I'm like, thanks. I feel so accomplished today. I stood up out of my chair.
I know some older folks that have them, and they have, you know, in case they fall or anything, it'll alert. But sometimes I was at dinner with somebody who had one, and he just, like, bumped his arm into the table.
Yeah.
And it was during a quiet moment at the dinner, and immediately starts going off, have you fallen? Have you fallen? 911 on the way. And it was, you know, everybody was holding hands and everything like that. So it was very funny. That's one of the downsides to the Apple Watch.
Yeah. Sometimes if I'm just talking on the air, I can't say her name, but the AI of your iPhone will perk up. I'm like, what? I missed that. What did you say? I'm not talking to you. So, yeah, some of the cons to the technology. But, hey, I like that. I can track my steps on this thing. That's good. All it's good for. Hey, I love this trade for the Atlanta Hawks last night, right? The NBA free agency is off and rolling, and then we got a big trade last night where the Hawks traded a bunch of draft picks to the San Antonio Spurs and got Dejounte Murray back from the Spurs, all-star guard who's only like 25 years old. Love this trade for the Hawks. Could be the best move of the offseason. I'll say that now. We'll see where Bradley Beal goes. He just opted out yesterday with the Wizards. But it's not a great free agent crop. James Harden opted out, but that's believed to actually help save some money for the Sixers in a surprising twist. And he's believed to re-sign with Philly. Kyrie obviously opted in. Russell Westbrook opted in. There's not a lot of big names out there. And we didn't really know that this was going to be a name either. But a nice trade pulled off by the Atlanta Hawks. Now, they did give up, what was it, 4 draft picks in the process to get Murray? But I think that's all worthwhile. Here was Woj was on ESPN earlier and explaining this trade for the Hawks that they pulled off with the Spurs, getting Murray from San Antonio for a bunch of draft picks. Here was Woj.
Now, this has been a Hawks organization, I think as much as any in the league, that was just determined that they were going to make changes, they were going to get better. They gave up a lot. 3 first-round picks, 2 of their own, 1 they have via Charlotte, and also a pick swap in 2026 with San Antonio. But Trae Young was really excited about getting DeJounte Murray in, and this is a group that, listen, they want to be improved. He'll improve them certainly on both sides of the ball. But Atlanta, listen, they're not done dealing yet. They still have been engaged on John Collins, and you know, I think fundamentally there's going to be some real there's going to be some more changes in Atlanta, but they're pretty excited about the idea of DeJounte Murray joining Trae Young.
Yeah, and they should be pretty excited. Now, they do need Murray to re-sign. He has 2 years left on his contract, right? So if you do all this for only 2 years of Murray, maybe not great. You'd like to get him to re-sign and keep him there longer. But he's just coming off an all-star game appearance. He's an all-star, and he's gotten better. If you look at his numbers, he's gotten better every year in the league, and he's still young. And now you get 2 good guards to run this team. And if you look at the East, the Hawks may have the best combination of guards on the perimeter. They may have the best perimeter players, 1-2 punch, in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they have 2 guys that have at least been to the All-Star game in Murray and Trae Young. No one else can really say that. The Bucks have a couple of guys, if you want to include Chris Middleton, but he's really more of like a small forward. But him and Drew Holiday have both been to an All-Star game before. Otherwise, like Kyrie and Seth Curry, I wouldn't necessarily include Kevin Durant. I would not consider him a point guard or a shooting guard. James Harden and Maxey, even Jalen Brown and Marcus Smart, they're up there. These are all duos that are in the conversation in the Eastern Conference. The Hawks are joining that conversation. Now, just last week, the Hawks promoted Landry Fields to their GM, who's only like 34 years old. Played in the NBA, injuries ended his career. Before he came to the Hawks, he was with the Spurs. And he was part of the reason he helped the Spurs draft Murray. So you know he likes him. You know he has that connection. You know, theoretically, he knows Murray pretty well. Just got him off from San Antonio. And this helps get Trae Young off the ball, is the idea. Trae Young's a bit of a blessing and a curse, right? He's great for the Hawks. Probably the best thing they have going for him. But he also can be a problem for the Hawks. He's not great on defense. When the ball's on his hands, kind of checks out at times. And the ball's probably in his hands too often. Probably tries to do a little too much. A little too much one-man band. So with this move now, you can get Trae Young off the ball. And Trae Young's own father tweeted out the idea of getting Trae off the ball and how that could be better for Trae. I think so. I think it could be better for the Hawks. Get the ball out of his hands a little bit more. Get him more engaged when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. Play off of Murray. I love this trade for the Hawks. I like this idea of bringing these two in. And now you have 2 All-Stars out on the perimeter. Travis Schlenk runs the Hawks. He was promoted to team president, whatever it is. He came over from the Warriors. I'm not telling you these two are going to be the next Splash Brothers. I'm not saying that. But when Schlenk was with Golden State, right, you get Klay Thompson, you get Steph Curry. And you have 2 stars out on the perimeter leading the way to championships. Now the Hawks have 2 young guys as well that's somewhat similar. Not as good as shooters. Probably not even as good on the defensive end. Won't win as many championships. But it's a similar build, a similar blueprint to have these 2 guys out on the perimeter. Kind of like what you did in Golden State. And in the process, Atlanta was able to keep John Collins as well. So now you could keep, if you want, keep John Collins to have some size inside. I thought they were going to have to trade John Collins for Murray. Instead, they just gave up Gallinari, which is pretty much a salary dump. And they get Murray back. So now you have Trae Young and Murray out on the perimeter and John Collins on the inside. But if you're concerned about draft picks, you could still flip Collins to get some of those draft picks back. I would say when it comes to the draft picks, right, because they gave up a lot in draft capital, there's an NFL GM who would tell you, F those picks. And if you're the Hawks, you hope they're all picks in the 20s anyways because you want to be in the playoffs. So I'll trade draft picks for an all-star. This is what I've always said, especially in baseball. Teams won't trade prospects for a known commodity, for like a Cy Young candidate or an all-star. You have no idea what that prospect's going to be. Same idea. You don't know what these draft picks are going to be, but you know you're getting an all-star back for the Spurs. If I'm the Hawks, give up those draft picks, especially in the NBA. It's a little bit of a crapshoot. I mean, all drafts are. Especially in the NBA, where usually these drafts are about 3 or 4 player drafts. And then the rest is just like, you know, who knows? Flip a coin. Who saw Steph Curry being the best player? You know, with Draymond Green, which you were getting there in the second round, or Jokic in the second round. A bunch of these guys. That pop that you don't really see coming. So the draft picks, giving those up, I'm not really worried about from the Hawks. And if you want some draft picks back, I'll just trade John Collins, because we know Collins and Trae Young do not like each other. Right? That's known. So if you want, flip Collins now, get those draft picks back, and it's all a wash. And you essentially traded Collins for Murray, and I think that's a fine deal. I like this move for the Hawks. Now, for the Spurs, if you're an NBA fan, you may be wondering, what are the Spurs doing? Giving up a 25-year-old All-Star, they got nothing else. Well, the Spurs were the original tankers, and they did it for Tim Duncan, and that worked out pretty well, and I imagine that's the same idea here. Because, you know, the Spurs, people always say Pat Riley ruined the NBA in the 90s because his teams were very physical, like the Knicks in the early 90s. It was his idea to become a very physical team. And then basketball moved from kind of like a ballet where, you know, you didn't really have your hands on one another to now it's a very, or at least it was. It's not as physical now, but it's still more physical now than it was back in the 70s or the 60s or the 50s or whatever it may have been. You know, Pat Riley kind of started that whole change. Maybe you credit the Bad Boy Pistons as well, Chuck Daly, but, you know, they were the guys that really brought the physicality and aggressiveness to the basketball court. And so people always hold that against Pat. Like, Pat Riley ruined the NBA. I think Greg Popovich has also played a pretty big role in bringing some of the things to the league that you don't like. Load management was started by the Spurs. And I think that's maybe the biggest issue in the NBA now. Tanking, the Spurs are kind of the originators. They tanked for Tim Duncan 25 years ago. David Robinson got injured, and they said, all right, our star's injured. We don't have much else. You got this Tim Duncan kid coming out. Popovich fired the coach, made himself the head coach, and they won 15 games that year and drafted Tim Duncan first overall. The Spurs, that was back in the 90s. They were like the original tankers. And now I think they're doing it again to get the next phenom. You're going to hear, if you're a basketball fan, you're going to hear a lot about this name over the next year if you haven't already. And by the time we get to the draft next year, we'll probably all have a better idea of how to pronounce it. His first name's Victor. That's the easy part. And I think his last name is Wembanyama, which is a pretty cool name. I think it's Victor Wembanyama. He's an 18-year-old in France. And go watch the videos online if you haven't seen him yet. He's 7'3", 230 pounds. Similar to a Chet Holmgren. If you watch him, he looks a little bit like Chet Holmgren, who just went number two in the draft. Really tall, really thin. Almost looks like a creation. Like, he doesn't look real. Looks like you're watching a movie. So tall, skinny, and lanky. But he's got a skill set that's more reminiscent of, like, Kevin Durant at 7'3", 230. I'm not telling you it's going to be the next Kevin Durant. But he's got that similar style that if you watch him, he looks more like a Durant than he does, I don't know, a Yao Ming or some sort of big guy. He plays out in the perimeter. He shoots it. He's athletic. 7'3", 18 years old, in France, 230 pounds. His mother played professional basketball. His sister plays professional basketball. And everybody's excited about him. He's similar to Chet Holmgren. Look, neither one's played in the NBA yet. This kid's 18. He's playing internationally. It's hard to judge. Just watching their highlights, I'd be more excited about Wembanyama than I would Chet. Also, they faced off against one another last year in the finals of the FIBA World Cup. Last summer, Chet Holmgren had 10 points and 2 rebounds and shot 3 of 8. Victor Wembanyama had 22 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 blocks in 27 minutes. And France lost by 2 to the U.S. in the finals. And he's a year younger than Holmgren. Holmgren's in the NBA right now. Wembanyama has to wait another year. When those two played each other last summer, granted, before Holmgren even played at Gonzaga, he was coming out of high school. Wembanyama, you know, at the time was like 17 years old in France. Wembanyama was the much better player. People think he could be the next Giannis, except even bigger. Maybe a Kevin Durant, a Porzingis. A lot of people are excited about Wembanyama, and that's the next big name. And the Spurs seem to be tanking for him in next year's draft because he's supposed to be this next unicorn, the next star of basketball moving forward. So if you're the Spurs and you're wondering, why are they giving up this 25-year-old All-Star? I think they're going all in on Wembanyama. He's supposed to be the next phenom. And you're going to hear a lot about him over the next 12 months if you haven't already. Go look up his highlights. It's pretty wild. Trent, have you ever seen anything from this Victor Wembanyama?
Yeah, he's exciting. There's no doubt about it. A guy of that size, 7'3", and it can move the way he does, especially with the ball. I think that's incredibly impressive. Yeah, I mean, any tall, skinny guy who can shoot on the perimeter, we're going to compare to Kevin Durant, obviously. Now, you've talked about it. I hate the comparisons with Kevin Durant. It's like, that guy's one of the greatest scorers we've ever seen. I think we need to stop comparing these young guys to them. But I do see a lot of those traits where, hey, he can move off the ball, he's got good handles, and he's a great defender. So whatever team is going to be number one, so let's just run through them real quick. The Thunder, the Pistons, the Kings, whoever it's going to be is going to be very happy when they get this guy.
Yeah, he's going to be exciting. Is he going to work out? Is he going to be a star in the NBA? I don't know. He's obviously going to have to bulk up. But he's exciting right now to think about this 18-year-old and what his future could bring.
All these guys need to bulk up. Every single one of them that's coming in, super skin. Kevin Durant's the outlier, obviously, yeah. Because he plays like he's 220 pounds. If you don't play like that, you're a little timid. Yeah, good luck. That's all I got to say, Chet, you know, with your comments. You'd be the best player in the NBA. Good luck when you're going one-on-one with Joel Embiid, pal. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to buy into the hype. Wembanyama's playing in France. Holmgren hasn't even played in the NBA yet. But if we're forecasting the future, just watching the little highlight tapes and watching Holmgren in college, I'd be more excited about Wembanyama. I feel better about his game moving forward than Chet Holmgren. And Wembanyama, like I said, you watch these videos, they almost look fake. He's 7'3", and so he's tall, and he's lanky, and he's got such a long reach. He's dunking from, like, the block. He just reaches out. And like it's like a freak of nature, and I mean that in the best way possible. These blocks that he gets, it's crazy. Now, he's very, very thin, but he's 7'3", he's athletic. And the concern, of course, which we won't know until we get to the future, but, you know, you always worry about, like, their legs, their knees. That's what happened with Porzingis, has had knee issues. Right? 7'3", and you're an athletic 7'3", running up and down the floor and jumping with that size. Always leads to lower body issues. We'll see about Wembanyama, but everybody in the basketball world, now that we've turned our attention to next year's draft, they're very excited about this kid, and I think the Spurs are trying to go all in on him. Meanwhile, while I think the Hawks have so far won the offseason, the Hornets are probably losing the offseason. Did not have a head coach in time for the draft, and then they've had some sort of issues where Montrezl Harrell got arrested because of having a bunch of weed in the car, and last night Miles Bridges was arrested for felony domestic violence after an alleged physical altercation with a woman. Not great for Michael Jordan and the Charlotte Hornets right now. Their offseason has been a bit of a disaster. So that's the latest there in Charlotte. Another player arrested. And they rehired their former head coach this offseason as well. Not going great in Charlotte. When we come back, a couple other notes to get to at NBA free agency coming up. And we'll play a little bit of a game as well. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Talking about the big trade for the Atlanta Hawks. Big fan. I think it's a good move by the Hawks. I think they're the big winners right now so far of the offseason that's just getting started. Now, how about James Harden opting out with the Sixers to then re-sign at a lower price to save a little money? Maybe we had Harden all wrong. Maybe the supposed fat suit was really just to get out of Houston and go to a better team. Maybe he is all about winning. Maybe now he's willing to take less money to help the Sixers build a better roster so they can win. I don't know. I was surprised to see that news. Maybe it's just James Harden helping out his buddy, Daryl Morey, the GM who has loved him more than anybody else seemingly has loved James. But I found that interesting. Meanwhile, Kyrie Irving, of course, opted in. And Chris Carlin on ESPN has been saying all week that Kyrie Irving's a lot like Kanye West. The two are very similar. So I figured we'd put this theory to the test. And we're also going to put Trent to the test. And I have a series of quotes here from either Kyrie Irving or Kanye West. And Trent, it'll be on you to figure out which one of those two said each line.
This might be my favorite game we've ever played.
So let's give it a try. Who said it, Kyrie Irving or Kanye West? All right. Number one. I am a proud non-reader of books. Who said it, Kyrie Irving or Kanye West?
Proud non-reader of books, I'd probably have to go with Kyrie Irving.
Kanye West is very proud that he does not read books.
Well, Kanye, maybe it's be proud of something else.
How about this one? Multiple Bentleys isn't making anybody financially set.
Kanye. That's Kyrie?
0-2. Mr. It's not all about the money, Kyrie Irving. Multiple Bentleys isn't making anybody financially set. Just opted in for $37 million with the Nets. Number three, I hate it when I'm on a flight and I wake up with a water bottle next to me. oh, great, now I have to be responsible for this water bottle.
That's Kanye West, right? Yeah, that has to be Kanye. First of all, by the way, Kanye, you fly private, bud, so you're not waking up with a small Dasani water after you took a snooze on the flight.
It doesn't. I don't even get it. It makes no sense. Why would you then be responsible for the water bottle? What does that even mean? Number four, is the internet real for you in your life?
Kyrie.
Wow, very good.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely a Kyrie.
Next one. I love this. May be my favorite one. I wish they'd make a new Grease.
That's Kanye.
Oh.
No, that's Kyrie.
Kyrie apparently is a big fan of Grease.
Is he? He's a John Travolta guy.
He loves Travolta.
I'm liking Kyrie now.
Yeah. Wants a Grease, another one.
Oh, wait. Are these tweets or like something that has just been said by these people? Probably a mixture of both?
Yeah, mostly Twitter, but just said in general. Some of these are from like interviews and such. Okay, next one. Did Kanye or Kyrie say it? I have like nuclear power. Like a superhero. Like Cyclops when he puts his glasses on.
That's Kanye West. That's Kanye West wholeheartedly. I mean, the guy calls himself Ye. I mean, what are we doing?
I have been musically inclined since I picked up an interest in instruments in fourth grade.
I think you're trying to throw me off here. Is that Kyrie?
It is Kyrie. Oh,
there it is.
Very good.
He's
going to
turn
question.
Into Antonio Brown. Just be performing at Lollapalooza.
That's right. That one is too, like, normal
to
be Kanye. He said, I've been musically inclined since I picked up an interest in instruments in the fourth grade. Kanye would have something else, some other way to say it. Just imagine if I woke up one day and I was whack. What would I do then?
Kanye. It's got to be Kanye.
Imagine that. Waking up whack. That would be terrible.
Oh, I love these guys.
The age of no more secrets is upon us. Who said that?
Kyrie. Activists. Yeah, Kyrie, there's no doubt about it. Luke, this might be a game where people will hate these guys. I'm starting to love these guys even
coming
more.
Coming around on them, Kanye and Kyrie. Whoa, Arby's has hamburgers now? Next, you're going to tell me the milkshake machines at McDonald's are working.
Is that Kyrie? It's Kanye.
No, it's a trick question. That's Bobby Harton.
What a tweet. What a tweet by Bobby. Atta boy.
Yeah. They already sold out of those burgers at Arby's, too. All right, next one. I love sleep. It's my favorite.
Kanye.
That is Kanye.
Yeah, he's a big sleeper, apparently.
Hey, I love sleep, too.
Yeah.
My intellect is everything I'm awake to.
Oh, that's Kyrie.
Very good. Yeah. All right, we're getting on a roll.
He's a woke king.
Speaking of which, I have one. Where is that? I'll save that for later. I think I got another one about being woke. Next line. I'm a robot. You cannot defend a robot.
Kyrie? Oh.
Bit of a trick question.
Yeah, yeah.
Kanye said that.
Yeah, I guess. You know, Kanye is. I mean, he's definitely a robot. There's no doubt.
I can see a basketball player saying that, though.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm a robot. You can't defend a robot. Next one. I don't think of Christmas as a holiday.
Kyrie.
Yep.
Yeah.
That made a little bit of waves when he said that.
Yeah.
A couple more. Did Kyrie say it or Kanye? I can analyze people's intentions immediately. That's just a warning to everybody.
Kanye. Yep. That's a big Kanye guy.
Keep your nose. Let me see. Keep your nose to the sky. Keep your heart to God. And keep your face to the rising sun.
Man, that's tough. I would have to say I'm going to go Kanye again. Did
Very
say
good.
That?
Yeah, it is Kanye.
The Sunday service thing and everything, that makes a lot of sense.
I am flawed as a human. I am flawed as a man. As a person, I am flawed.
I'm going to have to say, is that another Kanye?
It is another Kanye.
There we go.
Very good. I do not get baseball players' infatuation with the porn mustache. I really do not. Who said that?
Kyrie.
Bobby Harton.
Bobby Harton. Okay.
couple more. If you're very much woke, there's no such thing as distractions. Kyrie or Kanye?
Kyrie. Yeah.
Very good.
Bobby.
Justice could be clearing a path for people to dream properly.
Kyrie.
Oh, Kanye.
Oh, that's Kanye. Okay.
The only thing I command is respect.
Kanye?
Let's see. That is Kyrie.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I mean, he does like the respect.
I think he meant the only thing I demand is respect, right? The only thing I command is respect? I don't know. last one I have here. Is the get-in-the-hole guy the biggest douche in sports?
That's Bobby Harden.
Very
That's
good.
Bobby Harden right Bobby there. Harden. That's that one got a good bit of retweets. I know that one.
Very good. Who said it? Kanye, Kyrie, or evidently Bobby Harden?
They're all three on the same level, by the way.
Absolutely.
All of them are on the same level.
Are the great philosophers of our lives. There you go. Kyrie, I guess, really very much is like Kanye West with the things that they say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're both very, very outspoken. I don't know how to describe those two gents, but they're out there.
That's a good way to put it.
And now, were you a Kanye West music fan? Like, maybe, I would say, College Dropout 2004,
yes.
And then the Heartbreak album 2008. Ever since, it's just been like, all right. But those two albums took over the world.
Oh, my gosh.
There was an eight-year span there where Kanye West was the biggest thing.
Absolutely. I only liked that first album, and then I really didn't pay attention afterwards.
Oh, there's some heat on the Heartbreak
album.
Oh, yeah.
I may have to College Dropout is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I haven't listened to very much rap or hip-hop probably since that album. But that was in my wheelhouse. Around that time, I was really into the rap, hip-hop, R&B of that era, like late 90s into the early 2000s. And yeah, when that album came out, as you said, that was a big deal because nobody knew who Kanye was. He was like a producer before that, right? Nobody knew who he was.
Yeah, he was just a music producer, yeah. And apparently like he was making beats for Dr. Dre at one point, and then he just went into the studio, and Dre was like, make an album right now. Do it.
Yeah, College Rap was great. Even I love that one. I every once in a while, I go back to it. All Falls Down is a tremendous song. Yeah, big fan of that album.
Jamie Foxx on that thing, too.
Yeah. And yeah, no, I certainly have not paid any attention to his later stuff in recent years.
No, I Am God is one of them. Yeezus is another one. Yeah, those albums kind of went downhill, but the first two that he ever put out were incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. Kanye and Kyrie. There you go. coming up, we'll get to Trent Stakes. We do it around this time each and every day, and we'll do it when we come back. Did pretty well in that game. You got in a good flow there.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of easier to kind of depict which one was saying which, but they do sound very similar, both of them.
Yeah, they do. We'll get to Trent Stakes next. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. Last segment played Kanye or Kyrie, who said it? And Trent did pretty well, which leads us to this, because we do this around this time each and every day. But time now for Trent Stakes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, I know as far as your beer selection goes, you're a big Modelo guy.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah,
okay,
I love a good
so
Modelo.
I was thinking about it this morning because one of the best commercials in the game right now is a Modelo commercial. I always enjoy it. They always tell a pretty good story. The tattoo artist, there's been a couple of guys. So I wanted to ask you if you could be in any commercial ever, what would you be in for what brand? I would say personally, there's nothing cooler than, you know, the long form Nike commercials where, you know, everybody's running around with Odell and everything. So I would probably choose Nike because I love the brand as well. Who would you choose to be in a commercial with?
So that's a great one. So I was thinking of back to like my childhood, the commercials I love.
Okay.
I was going to say a specific commercial was the old, I think it was Bud Light, was the like the What's Up commercial.
Oh, yeah.
I used to pick up the phone and call it What's Up. But now that you said Nike, that reminded me of an old commercial. I believe it was Nike with the dribbling. They make a beat out of dribbling a basketball, and it was like a black and white commercial. I think that was Nike. That one specifically. So not just the brand, but that's I would be in that commercial doing some and-one dribbling moves to like a rap beat.
Okay.
So that's what I would say.
Yeah, I also was thinking about the, you know, the NBA when they do the Christmas Day and all the guys are shooting and they're making the jingle bells and everything
like
that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That'd be a good one. You know, if I can keep up with those fellas as far as shooting-wise goes, I would do it.
Well, I'm not much of a dribbler either, but, you know, it's Hollywood, so they can make me look good. That's my thought.
Exactly. And also I was thinking about, saw this on Twitter this morning. In my personal opinion, I love celebrations in sports, love bat flips, love fist pumps, everything like that. Is the Tiger fist pump, excuse me, the best celebration in sports, like as far as history goes? Or can you think of any other one that's just so iconic? The most iconic moments in golf are Tiger Woods in the red fist pumping after a massive shot. Do you think of anything other that that kind of strikes your mind a little bit?
The only one right immediately off the top of my head, maybe two that I think of now that I'm actually spending a moment to think of. Kirk Gibson hits the home run. He does his own little fist pump twice.
Sure.
Down by his hip with his balky knees as he rounds the bases after hitting that homer in the 88 World Series. And then the only other one was, now I'm trying to, I think it was Jordan. Jordan makes a shot and runs down to the other end and does like a series of fist pumps in the air.
Yeah, yeah, he jumped up and did this.
Yeah, did the jump.
Exactly.
That's probably the only other one. I think those are probably the only two. And then, yeah, Tiger does come to mind. I can picture Tiger Woods like multiple times in red pumping violently in the air. So those are probably the first three that I think of.
Yeah, no doubt. I always thought Tiger was the best. I also was thinking about a couple other ones, but they're not on par the biggest moments. I was thinking about the Kobe point, you know, how he always used to point after he you know, makes a shot. And I think now we can kind of start talking about Steph Curry either counting on his fingers, 1, 2, 3, and then 4 if he gets fouled from the three-point line, or the Steph Curry shimmy. I mean, there might not be anything better than when Steph hits a 35-footer and just shimmies down the court and then gets right back on defense. I think that's the coolest thing ever.
When it comes to the shimmy, I also think that Antoine Walker used to do the shimmy with the Celtics. That was almost like you would almost laugh at him instead of celebrating with him. And then the other one I just thought of, because we used to love this when we were growing up, Reggie Miller. And I had to look up the exact moment, but I guess it was a game winner against the Bulls in the 98 playoffs. But he hits the shot, and he runs down to the other end, but he starts doing this. He's spinning. He's doing like 360s in the air. He's so happy. He's jumping up and down and spinning and is just like twirling because he's so excited. That's one that growing up we always used to joke around about and loved from Reggie Miller, and I guess it was 98.
Yeah, growing up for me, when anytime Dwayne Wade for the Heat would jump onto the announcer's booth and get the crowd going, that was always my favorite thing in the world. And he did a little cabbage patch around the anytime he'd hit a big shot and there was a timeout, he'd do a little cabbage patch. That's why I absolutely love Dwayne Wade. Luke, sound the alarms. We have some serious odds movement when it comes to the Cleveland Browns. So within the last 48 hours, the odds for the Cleveland Browns that to win the AFC North were at plus 250. Now they were at plus 190, went to plus 270, now at plus 250. I checked this morning, Luke, and the Browns right now have a plus 320 to win the AFC North. And obviously the last team is the Steelers at plus 700. But this is significant odds movement for the Browns. What do the odds makers know? It seems like they're kind of preparing for a potential, you know, year-long suspension even more. And I would also point out, I mentioned to you a couple days ago on Trends Takes about the 10-plus wins as far as the NFL season goes. The Browns were minus 195 to win 10 games. Right now, plus 120 to win 10 games. So the odds makers may know something that we don't as of right now, because I believe the hearings are still going on today. Now, there's no timeline on when we will get an actual answer from the judge, Sue L. Robinson. But right now, the odds makers make it seem like when these continue to climb like this, and it was weird because last week it was at plus 270, went down to plus 250. And after the news we heard yesterday about there might be potential 6 to 8 games, I thought that it might go down even more. But instead, after that report, it went up. So I don't know what the sports books know, but this is something we should monitor incredibly closely, continuing before we actually know the suspension.
I'm with you. I always say it, right? For those that are listening, say, who cares about Vegas? I don't gamble. It's not even about gambling. No. It's about reading the market. Woj got the first pick wrong in the NBA draft. You know who got it right? Vegas. They knew it. So always monitor the lines in Vegas, because these people, they're building casinos for a reason. They know what they're doing. So it's always interesting to see what they believe, and they're moving it in the wrong direction for Browns fans. I could see this hearing dragging out and taking a while, but I could also see it's July 4th weekend coming up. People are going to be off the next couple days, and the NFL does like a classic news dump tomorrow at like 6 o'clock.
Yep.
And then most people like Stephen A., whoever, are not back until Tuesday, you know, 4 days later, and by then we have 10 other storylines going on in sports. So I could see this dragging on, but also part of me thinks we may get some news here in the next, like, 48 hours of what the punishment's going to be so that the NFL could try to bury this whole thing.
Right. Adam Schefter made it seem like yesterday in a tweet that I would go on past this weekend. Mm-hmm. But like you just said, the NFL loves doing this right here. Just, you know, Friday news dump, nothing going on, let's drop it. So that could potentially happen. I also think when the NFL, an NFL source, put out yesterday the 6-8 games, do you think that's potentially the NFL trying to get the feel of the world? Like, if you put that report out that it might be 6-8 games, you think they were going through the responses and kind of seeing the climate of potentially the suspension? Because in my opinion, Luke, it's a year. It's a year minimum and then go from there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it should be a year. I don't know. I saw this report and I'm surprised because it kind of contradicts what the NFL was apparently saying just a couple days ago, where they were pushing for at least a year. I don't know if it was either to see the reaction or to try to lay that foundation that if Deshaun does end up getting 6-8, you're already, now that's kind of what you're expecting instead of the 1 year. I don't know. I thought originally leaking that 1 year thing for the NFL was either to put more pressure on the arbiter or to make the NFL look better that if the arbiter only gives Deshaun 6-8 games, or they have to give a specific number, say 6 games, the NFL could say, well, you know, we thought it should have been a year so that they look better in the whole situation. So I don't know. All these leaks, I have no idea. I guess I'll just wait till the final outcome.
It's so difficult to follow, but right now, I mean, if it wasn't a year, I'd be incredibly shocked, and I think Calvin Ridley better be raising, you know, a lot of hell if Deshaun Watson gets 6 games and Ridley places, you know, $1,000 in bets and gets minimum of a year. Minimum. I think that's incredibly backwards, even though I understand what the NFL was trying to do with Calvin Ridley by setting an example, but you also have a guy who's got, you know, I guess 4 now civil cases and about 66 women in total that have accused him of sexual misconduct. So maybe you make sure those suspensions kind of line up a little bit before you make any brash moves, NFL.
Yeah. I said at the time of the Ridley, the NFL, they just care about the integrity of the game.
Yep.
So if you got Goodell in a room, he probably is more concerned about what Ridley did than what Deshaun did, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, with that said, if you only give Deshaun, say, 6 games, 7 games, whatever, compared to Calvin Ridley, you'll have a lot of upset, not only Falcons fans, I'm sure, but a lot of upset women that are like, man, you suspended Calvin Ridley for a year. Deshaun has all these accusations. You know, this is what women have been fighting for, that nobody believes them. They never get the fair punishment when something like this happens. And that would only give more fuel to that fire if Deshaun gets like 6 games compared to, like you said, Calvin Ridley getting at least a year for gambling.
Right. Last thing here, Luke. Motor City Dan Campbell, head coach of the Detroit Lions, has the 4th best odds to win coach of the year this coming season. Now, I want to get your opinion on this because I believe that he has a big shot to win the coach of the year if they go 10-7 and make it to the playoffs. Ooh. I don't think that will happen. I mean, they won 3 games last year, but in any world, and it's funny because the top 4 coaches, it's like Doug Peterson, Brian Daboll, Brandon Staley, and then Dan Campbell, a lot of young coaches who don't have a ton of experience. Do you think there's in any way, shape, or form that the Detroit Lions, if they win 10 games, if they go 10-7, they don't have to win a playoff game. They just have to make the playoffs, and I think Dan Campbell would win coach of the year. Maybe I have a future on him. Who knows? Maybe I will put that in at some point. But do you think there's any way that the Detroit Lions can win 10 games this coming season?
No, I don't think so. Either. I do think they'll be better. And I've been saying all last season, I think the Lions will be better than a lot of people think. I think they'll be better than last year. I think they'll be better than the Bears. But 10 games is way too much.
Yeah.
I'd put them at, like, if somehow they won 7, like, that would be that'd be like winning the Super Bowl for them this year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, statue of Dan Campbell goes up.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And you and I, you know, we cheer for teams that are in that division as well. So, yeah, I definitely hope they don't win 10 games.
Right.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt about it. But if they do, I mean, that could shake up a couple of things. The Lions, the Jets, the Jaguars, who will be the next Bengals? Is it the Lions? None of those teams have Joe Burrow. I'm sorry about it. And they don't have a young coach like Zach Taylor and a guy named Ja'Marr Chase. So that's just not going to happen just yet.
No, I'm with you. Right. It comes down to the quarterback. We started the afternoon talking about that at college with name, image, likeness. Same idea in the NFL. You need that star quarterback. And Jared Goff's not that guy. I will say this, though, about coach of the year. I have always said it should go to the coach that actually does the best coaching job. So, like, last year I was fighting for Nick Sirianni. I thought did the best job because the Eagles preseason odds, they were expected to win, I don't know, I think it was like 5 games. They went to the playoffs and won 9. Now I know they beat a bunch of bad teams and, you know, how good were they? But he got more out of that team than I think any other coach.
Right.
He didn't even get like a single vote last year. Mike Vrabel won the award because the Titans were the 1 seed. And look, the Titans had a bunch of injuries, so okay, Vrabel, I think, did do a good job last year.
Yeah, I think 90 different players on the roster, so I'm sure they factored that in.
Right, and they were still the best team. But a lot of times, when you say, who's coach of the year, people always say, like, well, this team's in first place. Yeah, like when Belichick was winning divisions with Tom Brady, and Belichick's the greatest coach of all time, but I'm not giving him the award because that's kind of like what's expected. To me, coach of the year should be, even if a team finishes in like third, like if you exceeded expectations, you were only supposed to win 3 games and you won 7, you did a really good job as a coach that year. So when it comes to coach of the year, in terms of like Dan Campbell, I don't think the Lions, like me personally, this is typically not how the votes go. But if I was voting and Dan Campbell this year say he wins 8 games, I would consider him for coach of the year, even if they're in third place, because he did a pretty good job with a bad team. But people don't really look at the award that way. I brought it up. I Googled it. Last year it was Vrabel. Last year, I'll say this, last year in defense of the voters, last year you could look at it both ways. Because Vrabel, as we just said, had a bunch of injuries and they were in first place. And then, like Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur finished in second. I mean, come on. Did he really do a great job last year? He got Aaron Rodgers and they won exactly as many games as the year before. So that's the type of deal where, for me, when I'm looking at coach of the year, more impressive to me was like Nick Sirianni, first-time head coach, first-time starting quarterback, gets the team to the playoffs when nobody was expecting it. LaFleur had Aaron Rodgers in a bad division, and they won the division, as they should have. So that's how I look at it. So anyways, that's my little rant, that when it comes to like Dan Campbell, if the Lions look a lot better this year,
right,
I would consider him for coach of the year.
I think that I feel like Brandon Staley is probably the leader. If they go to the playoffs this year, I feel like it's finally the Wonder Boy, the Ivy League guy finally gets his one. But also, Luke, don't sleep on our guy Mike McDaniel if they win a couple games.
For sure.
If they finish like second in the AFC East, if they beat out the Patriots a couple times, our guy Mike McDaniel, his swag is going to be up there accepting a coach of the year award.
I would love to see that. That's another good one. That's exactly what I'm saying. He takes over a team that – last year had a losing season. He's got a quarterback on the hot seat, first-time head coach. And if the Dolphins have a good year, he should be considered for turning around that team, even if they don't win the division or even if they're not in first place. That's what I look for when I think of coach of the year. Who did the best job? Just simply put, instead of, like, who had the best team. But anyways. Somebody at the text line said, what about a 20-game suspension for Deshaun Watson? I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, it may. If the NFL gets what reportedly they want, a year suspension at least, an indefinite suspension of at least a year, meaning you're going to miss this year, and then we'll see after that. We'll go from there. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe you could miss 27. I think a year is a good amount. I mean, you can make a case that if Deshaun is guilty of what they're accusing him of, he probably should never play in the league again. But at least a year, that's something. 6 games just doesn't feel quite right. And I don't want to compare apples and oranges, right? But this is a day after R. Kelly got found guilty of all of his terrible things that he did to women yesterday, and he's going away for a long time. Not to say what Deshaun did is the same as R. Kelly, but I'm just saying R. Kelly got some severe, while I'm thinking of such a terrible subject, R. Kelly got quite the punishment yesterday.
As he should have.
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he should have been put away for life, but, 30 years.
Yeah, and it should have happened a long time ago, too.
Yeah, geez.
By the way, not to get too dark or deep, can you still listen to R. Kelly music?
No, I really can't. I mean, did you see the documentary by chance?
No, I didn't.
Surviving R. Kelly?
I did not.
Yeah, that was terrifying, Luke. It was incredibly sad. I cried during the documentary. That's how much it gets you. This guy is a complete other scumbag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did some terrible things. So he got 30 years. That's not to say Deshaun did the same things as R. Kelly. I probably shouldn't even brought up R. Kelly in the conversation with Deshaun. But it was on my mind because I was reading about it last night, and I grew up enjoying R. Kelly's music. That's always a weird one. You like the music, but then the artist does something awful. It's like Bill Cosby. Can you watch anything with Bill Cosby anymore? I don't know. Can you separate the art from the artist? Anyways, that's a whole nother conversation to be had. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour 2. It's more Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Ben, lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Time keeps on slipping into the future. I want to fly like an eagle to the sea.
Wrapping up hour 2 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We've got a bit of a bombshell here in the sports world. I'm still even just trying to process this. But according to John Wilner, who covers the Pac-12, is one of the best at covering the Pac-12, I've read his work over the years. He said, according to a source, USC and UCLA are planning to leave for the Big Ten as early as 2024. Move has not been finalized at the highest levels of power. So that'd be 2 years from now. He just tweeted this within the last 25 minutes. Just quickly off the top of my head, right? I almost need a moment to like sit down and think about this. Obviously, it seems like it's would be a money move, like all these decisions are. The Pac-12 has been struggling. They've been on the brink of bankruptcy, so it's almost like jumping off a sinking ship before it goes under. And the Big Ten is much more powerful and better, and they bring in more money. I say all the time, right? I mean, the Big Ten, they have the best TV ratings. The Big Ten does better TV than the SEC even. You know, it's cold, people are inside, they're looking for things to watch. The Big Ten Network does really well. So the Big Ten is right up there in the SEC in terms of money and eyeballs and everything. If not the SEC, the Big Ten's a pretty good plan B. So obviously for money, better conference, resources, that's all good and well for USC and UCLA. It's obviously a bad sign for the Pac-12 and what the Pac-12 would be without USC and UCLA. But this is shocking news. Did not see anything like this coming, especially after Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma. We thought because he didn't want to go to the SEC, and now they may be going to the Big Ten at USC. A few more thoughts on this coming up. Hour 3 next. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.